The following program is presented by the Nerdy Show Podcast Network, geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by A Comic Shop, Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination, Nerdapalooza, the world's largest nerd music festival, and with the generous support of listeners like you. For more Nerdy Show podcasts, community forums, and learn how you can support this and other fine Nerdy Show programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
I'm Jeffrey Brown, I'm a cartoonist, and you're listening to Nerdy Show.
Welcome to Nerdy Show, a weekly podcast dedicated to every facet of nerddom. From comics and video games to science and technology, if it's geeky, we've got it covered. And this is an episode of Nerdy Show Comic Show, our monthly show where we discuss the latest in comic book news, the books we're reading, and anything else that we choose to talk about. Hi, I'm Cap.
Hey, I'm Brian.
I'm Adam.
I'm Tony.
This is Aaron from a comic shop, and now I'm in someone's room.
Well, you're in the studio.
Yes.
It's a studio.
There's no bed in here.
I was wondering about that, because what if you have to take a nap?
I have to take a
floor's carpeted.
I mean, you could have read a comic written by, I don't know, Tony S. Daniel. Have to take a nap.
Why'd you do that?
You should know.
I know why you did that. We're going to get into that. So we're talking about comics here, and this episode we hope is going to be less dreary than last episode. We were informational. We did what we needed to do, but it was a bitter pill that we had to take. We were talking about everything that was going wrong with DC Comics, and
there was a lot to cover since the last episode. It happens.
Yeah. Before we get in too far, we actually need to touch on it again, but it's going to be a little bit more lighthearted. And also, we've got an interview in this episode with Gail Simone.
So which is happiness.
Which yes. Has happiness, and happiness related to DC Comics, because she's back on Batgirl, and she's writing a new book that's great, and she's going to talk to us about it.
Yeah, her whole movement.
Yeah, which is not...
A bowel movement.
No. And also, the Green Team, the partner book, it's not written by her. I'm interested in that, though. It's a resurrection of a really old DC title.
Right.
Obscure as hell thing that they're pulling out of the closet, but why the hell not?
It looks cool. I like the idea of the two tandem-type books.
Displays, wait a minute, I haven't seen this from DC in a while. What's the word? Initiative, ingenuity, some sort of creativity.
Something like that. Yeah.
Some sense of purpose or connection to the culture outside of Dandadio's room.
I'm sure it won't last.
This thing we were sort of briefly touching on just back there, DC doing some more weird stuff. There was a creator summit, right?
Yes.
Tell me about how these creator summits go, Aaron. You know more about this than I do.
They get people together and be creative, you know? And
this is where all the big ideas come from, like their big arcs and stuff.
Yeah,
and
the direction for the next however long for different houses.
Rip off a guy's arms. No.
But
rip off a guy's head.
Oh,
genius.
Skull.
And give him tits.
No. That's for Vertigo. You're at the wrong summit.
And that's the same thing from Alan Moore every time.
No.
Okay.
It's welcome when he does it. When he does it, it's interesting.
I like him.
Okay.
But also, he compliments all tits with penises, so.
This is fair.
What was a big deal for this creative summit was all the negativity and all the retro solicitation, all the stuff where the solicitations were removed and all the creative shifts and all the negativity and all the like weird PR tour that they had to say like, oh, all these bad things happen, but it's all good now. Like, they had to smooth this over with the creators, specifically the writers, because for some reason DC thinks they can hire artists for their art style, but then hire a writer and tell them what they want them to write, which is really weird to me. And assurances were made by Dandadio, supposedly.
It's weird, you know, you can hire people, you know, in other countries to do that for you if you want to do.
Yeah.
I'm sure they have just as much a grasp on the characters as the DC editorial staff does. So.
A lot of promises were made, supposedly, and Dandadio made a specific promise that once a story arc plot was approved, there would be no editorial interference in that arc.
You hear Brian laughing.
Right? If they get a story arc plot approved, then they can write that plot and not have all the editorial interference to, you know, make it so it's not what they want to do, because it's work for hire and they got hired to do that. And
that sounds perfectly reasonable. Tell me how Dandadio fucked this up.
Well, it might not be Dandadio.
The promises were broken and big guys left. Like Diggle specifically on Action, he's following Grant Morrison. Grant Morrison made that book from the start. They needed a big name to follow him and they got Diggle. And Andy Diggle's, you know, he's a big deal. You know, he did The Losers. He did a great run on Hellblazer. He did Green Arrow Year One, Adam Strange. I mean, he's...
And,
like it or not, Grant Morrison's run on Action Comics was a big deal, and now it's over, so they have to have some kind of a follow-up. It was the only Superman book that really had readability going on for it. And I mean, I know that was a stretch for some people. Mostly, I'm looking at a lot of guys on Flame On right now when I say that. There were some, you know, Brian loves some Grant Morrison, but everybody else, they're not their flavor.
You can't argue that he had some great single issues.
Oh, yeah, exactly. That's exactly my feelings on it.
And you can also not argue that Action was and is a writer-dominated book.
Absolutely.
It was sold and pitched, and everything was the writing of Action. So Diggle, he's an A-list writer. You know, he did The Losers. He did Hellblazer. He did all kinds of great stuff. I mean, his Adam Strange was amazing. His Green Arrow Year One was freaking phenomenal. So he's on it. I'm super excited. I'm like, finally, I'm going to get a good Superman. You know, we know Snyder's coming in June or whatnot, but like, this is going to be great.
And Snyder's coming on Action Comics.
Not Action, but Superman
Unleashed.
Okay. You know, because the Lobdell stuff, I can't read it.
It's not good.
I can't. The omniscient narrator plus the thought bubbles plus so much dialogue that it's just ridiculous.
It's a very burdensome read.
Yeah, I can't.
Anyway, so this Diggle thing, it's been well promoted. And this most recent last couple weeks at DC, there's been like a 5-page preview in every single issue.
And it says this is a job for Superman. I'm like, apparently not Diggle. And then it's like, I don't like bullies. And I was like, Diggle doesn't like him either. He walks away. And, you know, it's just so ridiculous.
So it basically just summarized the writer of Action Comics, the guy who they've been promoting like crazy, walked off the book
before the first issue even comes out.
Yes.
His name's not going to be on it.
They're not even keeping whatever butchered script that he turned in.
They might, but you know, his name's not going to be on it.
Oh, okay.
And the solution from DC was, we're going to have Tony S. Daniel write the first arc.
And he's an artist.
Yeah. He has written stuff in the past, his own creator-owned stuff, and he wrote, what was it, the Dark Knight book? Detective.
He wrote Detective.
And that was, you know...
I stopped reading it almost immediately.
Yeah, he's an artist, you know? Yeah. Like my joke is, what if Tony Daniel walked off? Would they make Diggle draw it? What the hell is this, you know? I mean, we're sold a certain thing and replaced...
Well, see, everyone can speak in a complete sentence, and that is literally the only skill you need to write. That's what people in accounting or whatever, in payroll and human relations or whatever, that's what they think. So you get video games written by programmers, you get comics written by artists.
And it's a big disappointment. I mean, this was a majorly hyped thing. I don't see how DC can just PR this away with a little bit of like an interview with some Double Talk, because they promoted the hell out of this with Diggle's name.
Yeah, and he's not the only one either.
I was about to say, what about the double whammy? Because this came within 48 hours of each other.
Right, the Green Lantern stuff, which I was totally stoked about.
Basically, every Green Lantern book is getting a new writer all at once, which is massive because, you know, Geoff Johns has been on it for 10 years and mm-hmm. all that. And so there are a couple books that were going to Falcov, who's the guy who did a good job for subbing in for Gail Simone when that whole fuck-up happened.
Right.
And he's a great writer. Same deal as Diggle. Seemingly, anyway. You guys know more about it than I do?
Yeah, I mean, he would have been great for Red Lanterns and Green Lantern Corps. He's done a lot of darker stuff. He's done a lot of cool stuff. And I liked his plot that's solicited in previews, which, again, it's like, these fans are so invested in this stuff that we pay for the order form to tell people what we want, you know? And if the order form, which is previews, is not going to be accurate, once it hits there, it can still change and change for editors' whims. And
I mean, it's ridiculous. You get this book, you're soliciting things that don't exist, because apparently they're not doing them far enough in advance to sort things like this out. And it goes so far that they get the 6-page preview for Diggle in the back of every single issue.
Yes.
That's insane. Wow.
And this Falcov thing, it was, they were linked. The books were linked. Guy Gardner has a red ring, and he's the Green Lantern Corps main character. And then you have Red Lanterns with Guy Gardner with a green ring and a red ring on it. And I'm Guy Gardner's biggest fan. And if anyone says they're a bigger fan of Guy Gardner than me, I will kick their fucking ass.
See, that's what the biggest fan would have said.
Because I am the greatest, the number one fan of Guy Gardner. And the rumor is Jon Stewart was being killed. And that's why Falcov walked off of it, because he didn't want to be the guy responsible for the death of DC's most prominent black character.
That is pretty bad. And I mean, I know they've got the Arabic guy now, but I mean, come on.
That was just swapping out minorities.
It is gone.
Well, that was my call when that book first came out, when I did that video straight out of Dearborn,
mm-hmm.
Because he's from, you know, Michigan.
Yeah.
And I said, well, they got a dark-skinned minority character. Now they can finally kill off Jon Stewart after they tried to kill him with a million cuts, making him so boring, you know, that now they can finally, the headline wouldn't be DC kills their only minority Green Lantern. It's DC kills one of their two minority Green Lanterns. It's not as big of a headline. That's why I thought it was going on. But still, I wanted Falcov's Guy Gardner. Yeah. That's what I wanted as a fan. And that's what's solicited. And that's what I'm excited about. And this isn't as bad of a replacement because it's Van Jensen who did Pinocchio Vampire Slayer.
Oh, shit.
And Van Jensen is...
good for him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's great friends with Vendetti. You know, he's like always biting on his booth. It's like Pinocchio Vampire Slayer is printed by slave labor, but you see him at the top shelf booth at every con with Vendetti. So there's going to be a lot of good synergy with that.
Vendetti, for reference, the guy who just scored the gig of following in Jeff Johns's place on Green Lantern and also guy behind Exo Manowar. Surrogates. Oh, for the, until something happens.
So, you know, it's not as bad as the artist writing the book, but still, you know, I wanted Falcov's Guy Gardner and I'm not getting it. So screw you, DC. Get your act together.
I mean, we could say, man, why do we spend so much time talking about this? It's upsetting. It's upsetting. Really upsetting.
Especially when comics these days are very much driven by the creative team behind it. Yeah, we're in love with the characters, but we've been burned so many times by these characters being given the shit can.
It's like, it's not, I'm not just frustrated as a fan. I'm just frustrated because it's like, this is a business. If I'm saying to myself, I could do this better than you.
Yeah, right. I was about to say the fans have plenty to get upset about, but like, Aaron, you're a retailer. I mean, these solicitations come out for months and they're pounded into everyone. Everyone's got expectations and then they change it.
If you're going to plan an artist signing, a writer signing, you have to do it well in advance and you get previews and you see it and you line it up and you buy plane tickets. And, you know, I have Vendetti coming. And if Vendetti was off the book, you would hear me livid about that because I have that all lined up. So, you know, I'm glad I didn't line up Falcov for a signing. But
hey, you could have him in to tear the books up like you did with Daniel Way.
Yeah, that would be cool. So I don't know. I mean, it's very frustrating for retailers. It's hard to market, obviously. I'm sure the marketing people for DC are freaking livid.
I can't even imagine what they're doing.
They have this job of marketing and putting that in the back of all the comics, the Action Comics, you know, Diggle thing. And then suddenly because of some editorial problems, you know, like get your shit together, editorial. Yeah.
Really?
Go back to school and become a writer if that's what you really want to do. Stop pretending to be just an editor.
Let's talk happy stuff.
Well, I don't know. While we're on the topic of DC, let's not break away from it.
However, let's talk. It is a positive thing that DC's done. It's depressing, but it's been handled very well.
This is a good example of a writer having the power to do what they want to do and to tell a good story without anybody getting in their way. And that is the death of Damian Wayne. I assume this. We're just going to go ahead and, you know, full disclosure, if you haven't read this and if you were wanting to like read it yourself, we're going to talk about it pretty candidly now. You know, I don't think we'll ruin it, but we'll just talk about it.
USA Today spoiled it, you know, before the book even came out over a month ago.
Yeah.
With actual specific details on how he died.
That sucks.
We're not too bad in this.
It's been rumored for a while and it's still actually pretty hard. You know, I haven't really been affected by a character's death, but I really enjoyed Damian.
Just this really competent asshole Robin.
He was endearing. Like Kid Loki's endearing.
Right.
And if they ever kill him, I'm going to be like even more upset probably.
I really wanted the Guy Gardner Damian team up. You
or
know?
Turn him back.
I really wanted that. Give Damian a red ring.
Oh, man.
Oh, dear Lord. That would have been amazing.
And it's weird. I had this thought the other day. You know, I haven't read every Batman book that's come out since Damian was a fixture in Batman's life. And now I'm thinking about, man, I wish I'd taken the time to read those other Batman stories. Every issue was a gift.
Right.
Yeah.
I tell you, of all the different RIP books that have come out since then, one of the ones that hit me the hardest was Nightwing, just because there was this relationship between Dick Grayson and Damian Wayne that was always hinted at. You got to see it developed a little bit pre-New 52, that it was kind of up in the air. Was this still a big thing? And just that issue was so, that was gut-wrenching, because that's the loss of a brother with somebody who actually shows emotion, whereas Bruce is sitting there and suffering on the inside.
Never mind the dialogue between Dick and Damian in the issue where he died. Like, that was
why don't we do this more often?
Something about the youngest Robin with the eldest Robin, just...
It was perfect.
Great. Right.
And that's a tribute to Grant Morrison's writing. It was so pitch perfect. And
did you read 9 yet? Batman Incorporated 9?
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh man, Nightwing went like batshit crazy after it happened, like in real time. Well, he was there.
Yeah. And I mean, they both did. Batman broke a sword with his foot, a bare foot.
Bare foot.
That's some serious rage.
Right.
And it was interesting going back to 9, because we've seen the aftermath, the fallout, where this is a fixture in everybody's lives. But to go back to right after it happened, it's reopening the wound almost.
I mean, Bruce, it was really rough for him. He had to break the news to Bat-Cow, you know? No, that really happened.
And I saw it.
And it was amazing.
Yeah. Brian, have you seen Damian Wayne's Menagerie of Bat Animals?
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
It is. It's good stuff.
I hope that they keep me informed about what is actually going on with Bat-Cow. I mean, Batman just told Alfred to take a vacation because he didn't want to see him. So, and fucking then, okay, Bat-Cow's dead. Bat-Cow died too, because I mean, then we see in the detective, Batman's been going out like not sleeping for a week on end. So he leaves. He says goodbye to Bat-Cow. He leaves. He fires Alfred. He doesn't come back home that whole time.
No, he's right. Gonna come back.
All Bat-Cow the animals
will,
are dead.
Bat-Cow will have learned to feast on the flesh of the bats in the cave.
I saw Bat-Cow on the variant cover of Little Gotham #1. It's like the moon and Bat-Cow jumping over the moon and Damien's on it. It's all drawn by...
Really?
Yeah, it's really cute.
What?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I don't know much about that book. The fuck is going on with that book?
If Damien is jumping over the moon with Bat-Cow, that means that Bat-Cow is actually dead.
Moment of silence. Oh, no.
Moment of silence.
They're actually in the Phantom Zone.
Definitely down about Damien's death, but at least something's going right at DC. At least people can still tell powerful stories. And even though I've heard that it's kind of a late in the game thing, like not all the writers knew Damien was dying and they were kind of pissed about it.
Especially not Tomasi, who writes Batman and Robin, which is Batman and Damien.
And
he didn't know. And it's like, ooh, what the F is this? You know?
Yeah, that's bad. Someone fucked up.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like Morrison couldn't pick up a phone. The editor couldn't pick up a phone.
That was the go-to book to read Damien stories, Batman and Robin.
I didn't read all of it, so it's the one I'll be going back to get my post-mortem Damien fix.
And the weird thing, too, is how it jives with Death of the Family and the death of Damien, that obviously Death of the Family happens first because Damien's alive and not dead. But then it's like, it just, like, some of it... It just kind of pulled me out of the story in a little bit, because Bruce is like telling Alfred to take a vacation because he let Damien leave the cave and go fight and die. Mm-hmm. I mean, if I was Alfred, it's like, well, I was in the manor when you let Joker break in and kidnap me and almost kill me, so I think we're even, you know? Yeah.
Like, I'm getting real tired of your shit, Master Wang.
Right? There's something that doesn't work.
The manor obviously isn't that safe. Yeah. You know?
And it's interesting that I really like to ask Scott Snyder about is he did, you know, Death of the Family, and it didn't end on a death, and there's a lot of people calling bullshit on it because they didn't really understand what the book was about.
Yeah, they don't understand metaphor.
Right. But then immediately afterwards, there's actually a death. And it's weirdly conflicting in a way they complement each other, but also kind of not.
Right.
So there's a definite disconnect there. I'm interested in how that really plays out as far as the back end of things. But
I find it kind of comforting that Grant Morrison had this plan all along. Like in all the interviews that are coming out now, he's like, this was my plan. Damien was to die.
From the moment he was introduced, which is exactly Morrison's tantric way of storytelling.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then when he's in all these other books, then it becomes like, you know, why are we buying all these other books if even the writer of Batman and Robin doesn't know when he's going to die?
Well, in that respect, you know, Grant Morrison, he's a very sort of metaphysical writer. That means that they were telling more honest stories because they themselves didn't know.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Nice.
It just works good. I mean, the falling out, like when parents get divorced or when they squabble or something like that, what's the cost to the child?
And I mean, an airplane could crash into this room right now and we could all die. It could just happen.
I'm looking up now.
Hey guys, this is Cap from the future. Just real quick before we conclude this DC Comics discussion, if you want some serious DC truth bombs, look no further than the latest episode of Epic Piecast. Nelson and Schaefer interviewed Lucas Siegel of Newsarama, and he's got some killer insights about what's going on over there, including that Harper Row, the girl seemingly being set up by Scott Snyder to become the new Robin, will not become the new Robin. Other stuff there, too. You got to go over to Epic Piecast and check that out. There's a link on this episode's page.
Anyway, we're going to take a song break right now. What we got here is a collab between Brandon Strader and two of our pals from Overclocked After Dark / Overclocked Remix, Brushfire and Level 99. This is called For Great Justice, and it's inspired by Zero Wing, the origin of the All Your Base meme. This track features the intended dialogue of the opening sequence, and then the medal that Zero Wing deserves.
In AD 2101, war was beginning.
I need a status report.
Self-destruct sequence has been initiated.
We've got an incoming transmission.
What? Patching it through.
Deactivation of command function override requires altitude clearance.
It's you.
How are you, gentlemen? We have successfully acquired your base of operations. Prepare to be destroyed.
One moment to auto-destruct.
How dare you?
Your time has run out. Savor your final moments.
This is someone's idea of a practical joke, right?
Captain, what should we do?
Arm every SIG for deployment. Initiate launch sequence. Open the pod bay doors. Justice shall be served.
So recently we were at MegaCon. It wasn't exactly the bells and whistles, fireworks and strippers kind of MegaCon we had the previous year.
I don't know. There was some dancing.
Well, there was some dancing, but we didn't have a booth. We didn't have a panel. And all in all, MegaCon was a bit mellow. It was a big deal, though, because they had the entire cast of Next Generation there. Mm-hmm. Except for Whoopi Goldberg, which I call bullshit on. You don't have Guinan, come on. But it was a weird MegaCon, and everybody I've talked to has said this. It was a very chill MegaCon. It didn't have the same density. Grandeur. And I mean, it was the same. It was as big as last year, mm-hmm. but it was missing something. Stan Lee canceled. Mark Waid canceled.
Had a lot of cancellations just in the comics world. Made for some very awkward panels.
Yeah. Presumably because they spent all the money on the Next Generation cast, they didn't pull in any kind of diversity from the rest of their actor guests. And the independent artists were still great. It just, I don't think there was the same sort of turnout. It was weird. It was hard to put your finger on what exactly was off about it.
I mean, Saturday felt as busy as the other Saturdays I've seen, but Friday and Sunday were decidedly sparse. Especially right. Friday.
Yeah. MegaCon is the biggest you know, show in the Southeast?
The biggest comic show in the Southeast, but you know, because Dragon Con doesn't
identify as a comic show.
It is big. No one's saying it's not big. It's just not, at least this one really wasn't comic, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it felt like, more like the Star Trek The Next Generation con.
Right.
But not even like a solid Trek convention either. So
remember when Jeff Johns was there? Remember when, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, and Dan DiDio, you know, bless his heart. I mean, if he's there, you know, there's going to be some panels that would at least be exciting to go to. Like when he was there and he's like, who do you guys think is going to be the White Lantern? I'm like, Swamp Thing. And he's like, what the fuck? Get that guy out of here. You know,
he saw my secret notebook. Get him out.
Well, and also, you know, the famous Booster Gold incident with Dan DiDio.
Yeah, that happened.
Where Aaron was in the bathroom with Dan DiDio, and Aaron was wearing a Booster Gold shirt, and Danny just said, oh, that's a cool shirt. What's that of?
Oh, wow. Jesus. It really happened.
That whole operation.
I mean, there it is in the flesh. It's not us just randomly being, that guy's probably the douchebag who's screwing it up. No, there's some truth to all that.
It seems like it for sure. But, you know, without editors on any Marvel or DC and without really much of any writers, you really can't have lively panels, you know?
It's true.
You had some cool artists there. I mean, obviously Frank Cho was making the circuit again. Amanda Connor was there.
If there's a panel where the artist and the writer of the same book are on the panel and they're going to have like a lot of good witty stuff back and forth, I'm there. But when it's just like an artist without his writer, it's a little bit like, okay.
I heard that there was a really awkward X-Men panel.
For the Claremont?
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard they confronted him directly about the Hellfire Club.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
I didn't hear that. Yeah, I heard it was just an awkward, uncomfortable thing, but that sounds cool.
We have to tell the story.
Yeah.
Well, I wasn't there, but from someone who went there said they asked that. Someone asked the question specifically if he was involved in sex fetish clubs in New York and if that's what inspired the Hellfire Club stuff. And he said, no, that's just a rumor. And he's like, well, it's a rumor that's on Google all over. And this is, you know, something substantiated by a lot of other people that worked with you in the past. And he's like, that's just a rumor. And it's like, okay, but, you know, we understand that, you know, you're not kinky anymore because you're all old. But I mean,
well, we also know everything that you've drawn and written. So,
well, I don't, it's kind of too bad. I mean, one, it's nobody's business but his. But two, he should just live it up.
Yeah,
why,
right.
Why the hell not? If we all know, what does it matter at this point?
Yeah.
I think still the greatest thing about MegaCon is the accessibility. If you do want to actually meet the creators who are there, and hopefully, you know, they're the ones you want to see and they didn't cancel, Frank Cho, Gail Simone, even Claremont to an extent, like they're all accessible.
Yeah.
Walk right up, talk to them.
I talked to Claremont.
And hell, I mean, the entire Neil Adams comics lineage was there and it was real easy to, they had a more organized line than some others, but you could just walk up, say, hi, Mr. Adams, you know, I really respect the work that you've done and you are a living legend.
Yeah.
You should go to HeroesCon because you get the accessibility plus the lack of cancellations.
Yeah. HeroesCon is a comics fans comic convention.
It's a smorgasbord.
And you can bet your ass that Nerdy Show is going to be there in a big way. if you're thinking about coming out to that, that is the convention to go to if you love comic books. So, and we will be there.
Oh, yeah.
So we talked to Gail Simone. She was available on the floor. We spoke with her and it was actually a good chance to get her because she's about to embark, or maybe already has at this point, on a massive world tour. She's going to Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, a bunch of other places, I think, as well. Anyway, she's going all over. So it was a good chance to talk with her. And we spoke a little bit about the new book she's got coming up.
We're here at MegaCon. It's Adam, myself, Tony, Hex, and we're speaking with Gail Simone. Gail, how's MegaCon been treating you?
Oh my God, it has been so fantastic. It has been so busy, and people are just full of energy and excitement for all the new projects, for Batgirl, for everything they're seeing here. It's been really fun.
I kickstarted your Leaving Megalopolis. I'm very excited about that coming out sometime this quarter. It's like, what, April?
Yeah, it should be coming out in April. Thank you so much, and thanks to all the people who backed the Kickstarter. It's looking gorgeous. Jim is doing the work of his life. It's amazing. And the first 10 pages, the preview that's up at Kickstarter right now, is so beautiful and moody and textured and scary at the same time, and you are just getting a glimpse.
It is crazy. Like, that desolation is quite complete. I'm really excited to see where it goes. With that story, you've invented a whole world of superheroes and characters and so on. Is it sort of an allegory for what we understand as currently existing heroes, or are these completely fresh Gail Simone originals?
These are fresh Gail Simone, Jim Calafiore originals. I'm not a huge fan of, for myself, of superhero allegory. I much prefer to create new heroes, and that's what these are. And it's been really fun because we've come up with some things that we haven't seen before anywhere.
Awesome.
And it's crazy. Some of the art that you guys haven't seen yet that I've seen has actually given me nightmares, even though I wrote the scenes that the art is based on.
Like any good suspense story, just because you know that the guy's coming, it's the anticipation that builds and creates that sense of...
Well, this is a survival horror, so there is a lot of moments, and a lot of people are asking me, well, is it like Walking Dead? It's not like Walking Dead. It's a survival horror, but it's something completely different. It's very haunting and beautiful and brutal and sexy and violent and all those things together, that focuses on a very small band of people trying to get the hell out of Megalopolis. It's a very personal story.
I got a question. I mean, Red Sonja coming up. I'm so excited for that. I was just curious. I mean, that's with Dynamite. What kind of voice are you looking to bring to this character that, I mean, it's a flashy character, right? So, I mean, is it challenging to bring your own voice to this character, or...
I wouldn't call it challenging. I would call it having a blast, because I have loved Red Sonja as a character for a long time. I'm not a fan of some aspects, some ways that she's been portrayed, but some I've really liked, and I really like the early Robert E. Howard. She's much stronger, much more in control of her own destiny and stuff like that. And I've always loved Barbarian comics. I've put them in Wonder Woman. I put them in Secret Six. I put them in All New Atom. And so to be able to actually write like a real long Barbarian story is really exciting for me, because we want to be able to smell the body odor and feel the dust and the blood caking and the heads rolling and the alcohol flowing and all of that. And I just am having, it's one of those books where I literally think I'm sitting down to write 2 pages just, you know, to like clear my mind, or 2 pages before I finally nod off to sleep. And then I look up and it's 12 pages later, because I've gotten that immersed and that had that much fun writing it. I'm not like looking at my clock going, well, my time's up, I'm done writing for the night. It's like, just, you know, really fun.
That's really cool. I read Red Sonja for a while when Dynamite started, and the book was relatively inconsistent with it, so I'm really always eager to see, you know, new people come on it and change things up. And it sounds like your Red Sonja is where I've always wanted it to be. So that's very, very, very awesome.
Well, she's badass, that's for sure. And there's also this set of twins that think that she needs them to protect her. And so they're really fun and funny and aggravating to her and everything. And she's going to be, you know, one of the things I do love to do in comics is put these characters in like the worst possible situation they've ever been in, that they can't possibly get out of, or that they've never been in before. And Red Sonja definitely comes up against this.
You mentioned something yesterday about the variant covers of Red Sonja that I thought was really cool. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I'm so excited. We have some of the top female artists in the industry doing the covers for this book. And that includes Nicola Scott, Amanda Connor, Fiona Staples, Stephanie Buscema, Colleen Duran, and the list goes on and on. And so you can go online and see some of those, but every single one of them has been fantastic. They are sexy, they're story related, they have something to say, and the really fun part was finding out that these female artists were like closet fans of Red Sonja and also excited to draw Red Sonja, and everyone wants to draw Red Sonja in the chainmail bikini, which I find hilarious and awesome.
One of the most anticipated books for DC in the near future is The Movement. And I think that the premise, especially in the wake of all the Batgirl trauma and everything, everybody's really excited to see you running a book that promises to be balls to the wall.
Yeah, The Movement is something completely different from what DC's published. And I think the people that liked The Authority in the day, that liked Secret Six, that want to read something completely new and edgy, they will like this book. This book is in part of the DC Edge line, and I would say that it's more edgy than Secret Six. It's basically a group of young teens, 17 to 22, who are dirt poor, pissed off, and have superpowers. So we have a cast of six, and I'll reveal the names right now. I won't tell you much about them, but we have Virtue, Burden, Mouse, Tremor, Catharsis, and Vengeance Moth. And they all have brand new powers, brand new characters. And it's been really fun for me and interesting because these kids are dealing with situations and concerns that the youth of today have. It's kind of like if the Teen Titans were created now, this is kind of what The Movement is. It's an adventure comic, but it's not talking about sock hops and barn dances and things like that. It's talking about global situations and how do we get everybody involved globally to take down this corporation that's corrupt or this local police department that's abusing their power, and how do we watch, and I don't want to give away too much, but how these kids go about taking care of what they think is wrong. And frankly, they're not always right. Sometimes they're misguided.
In a quote you gave about this book, you said you've been thinking about it for a long time. And I was wondering, does it actually predate the Occupy movement? How long have you been thinking about this, in fact?
I've been thinking about it for a long time, and it does predate it in terms of thinking about these different characters, thinking about doing something young with this type of an edge to it. I wanted to do it for a long time because sometimes it's frustrating to me that we're not telling stories always that I think are what people are really immersed in. And although these kids have superpowers and you know, this is a comic book story, it's an adventure story, we're talking about some real world problems that actually do go on. And you know, my son's in college, I am at the college a lot, I'm around his group of friends as well as online, and I'm listening to what they're talking about and what's getting them pissed off and angry and stuff like that. So this is stuff that they're really thinking about, and I think we all should really be thinking about.
In what way does the movement interact with the seeming campaign title, The Green Team?
It's kind of subtle at first, and then as it goes on, it'll be more and more, we're hoping.
I'm a follower of your Tumblr, and I'm a big fan of it, and it's amazing how active you are on it and how responsive you are, and I'm just curious if your interactions on there is influencing thoughts of the movement at all.
As a writer, I think everything that we experience in our life gets in there somehow and then comes out at some point. I wouldn't say that specific things necessarily cause me to tell a specific story, but definitely trends do. Or like if I see someone who's cosplaying and they look really cool and they're like maybe a person of color or something, and I want to bring something like that flavor into a book, I will ask their permission to use it as reference for the artist. I've done that a couple times because it's one thing to have a description of how I want this character. It's another thing to say, this is, you know, basically what I want. So there's some of that going on. I enjoy the interaction. I enjoy hearing and meeting different people from all over the world. Being from a small town, it's wonderful that I have that opportunity, that if I want to write a story in Singapore or South Africa or Barcelona or whatever, I can talk to people that are in those areas right on the ground and really help me out with getting the accuracy right. Because I'm not always right. I don't know everything. I haven't been exposed to everything, and Tumblr will set me straight sometimes.
Obviously, Red Sonja, The Movement, Leaving Megalopolis, you got a lot on your plate right now. Is there anything... And Batgirl. And coming back to Batgirl. Yeah. Is there anything else you've got going on?
Those are the things that I can talk about currently. I am working with some other people on some different projects that I'm excited about, but we're working out scheduling and timing and all those kinds of things, so it's not time to talk about yet.
Well, thank you so much, Gail.
Thank you, guys. This is awesome.
So this MegaCon was a little bit blasé by comparison to last year, which was insane.
Stan the man.
Yeah, and the year before that was even more insane for me. You know, I was making out with dudes.
That's right.
It's true. You're welcome.
But you can expect us to have a big Nerdy Show presence this following year. It, despite how mellow we've been saying it was actually, it filled up quickly. It filled up quicker than last year, and that's why we didn't have a booth. So we're definitely going to have a booth this coming year, and it's going to be
gigantic.
Yeah, gigantic. Even an even bigger deal.
Here. And we can get Brian down again next year.
That would be wonderful.
I'll be there, sure.
Yay.
Hooray.
Unless I have to cancel.
Oh no! Don't let him talk to Mark Wade anymore.
It's gonna rub off on him. Ooh. Anyway, let's cut to a track. What our glorious music director John Hex Carter has picked out for us here is a little something from Bill Prakopow of I Fight Dragons under his moniker Will Post. This is the very melodic and glitched out World on Fire.
Calling out,
Okay, so now we're going to talk about the books we're reading, the stuff we're loving, things you should read, and all that jazz. If you want to know what comics to check out, this will be your segment.
Hell yeah.
Get the Hawkeye.
Oh, yes. Oh, dear God, get the Hawkeye.
It just came out. Go get it.
Oh, yeah, man. I sold 10 copies of that in the first day.
We're just reiterating what we said, but we can't say it enough. When it comes to Marvel and things you can just like pick up and enjoy, Hawkeye, Daredevil.
Pretty much anything on the Marvel Now line, almost. I mean, well, Marvel Now is... Because Guardians of the Galaxy, I knew nothing about going into, for example.
Just backing up a bit, basically the reason that the Daredevil and the Hawkeye are in their specific category is they're very artsy books that kind of live in their own corner, so you can just read that and be happy with that. Guardians of the Galaxy, it's an ensemble cast piece. It's very much embedded in the Marvel Universe in a way the other books aren't. That's basically the distinction. But that's Guardians fair. Of the Galaxy, fuck yeah, Guardians of the Galaxy. And I'm a guy who's followed all of Abnett and Lanning's entire like multi-year space opera. And even still, new stuff, I'm all for it. Fuck yeah, Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
Is there any way that we can get Star-Lord a theme song? Because I just want to really rock in 70s. Star-Lord!
Yeah.
Oh, that would be great.
Like, I want that audio sting every time he pops up for the first time in an issue.
We need to something get...
Something can do that like with the Marvel the augmented reality.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Like the greatest dancer, except with something about like space.
I assume Stan Bush is affordable. The guy did the Transformers.
Oh, songs. I love that.
We'll just commission him to do a Star Wars theme.
Stan.
We'll get it. You know, we'll get it pressed.
Like,
we'll
your mom fucked an alien.
We'll send it to Joe Quesada. It'll be in the Guardians of the Galaxy movie. No problem.
But Bendis actually called me yesterday.
What? Shut up.
Yeah. Because he saw the video where I was...
You braggy braggerson.
And it's specific your feet, about Guardians of the Galaxy
I know,
one.
But it's deserved, though, because that's fucking cool.
Yeah.
He really liked how I was being supportive and promoting it and mentioned that it's not a reboot and that I even like put the exact panel up in my video where Star-Lord's dad mentions that he was in Cancerverse, fought Thanos, was dead, and came back somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And Peter didn't want to explain himself to his dad, and essentially he didn't explain himself to the reader, but... Bendis is letting us know this did happen, and I'm going to get back to it. Just give me a little bit of time. Like, I really think, like, maybe, like, the third arc's going to be whatever happened to Rich Rider, and we'll find out. And, you know, that's all good.
I hope so. I tell you what, I'm confused as hell by how much I like Nova. I didn't expect to like that at all.
Especially with that first name there, Mr. Jeff Loeb. It's just, it's confusing, especially because him and Ed McGuinness, whenever they team up, you generally guarantee just big, dumb action. And then instead of getting just big, dumb action, you have this father-son relationship that is so pitch perfect that you find yourself drawn into it without even realizing you're reading a Jeff Loeb book.
Mm-hmm. And McGuinness's art, it gets a lot like just He-Man figures, you know, just big bubbly He-Man figures. And you know, when Superman fought Bizarro in, you know, Superman Batman, it was like just
meatheads.
It was 22 pages of like two He-Man figures being bashed together. Like, I could do that myself with two He-Man figures, and I'm not an artist.
And then he does regularly every Nova, day.
That's his accounting.
Right. But Nova, I mean, that's the kid body type. You have the raccoon body type. You have all these different things going on that he's really stretching himself artistically with that book.
Mm-hmm. And it's genius. I love it.
I'm still like, why? How is it good?
And next week's Thanos Rising, number one by Jason Aaron.
Yeah,
I've read it.
Wait.
And it is so freaking good. It's insane.
One thing kind of confuses me about this recent surge for, you know, the space stuff. I mean, obviously we've got the Guardians of the Galaxy movie that we have to sort of, you know, make some comics to lead up to and all. But what is up with the distinct lack of all space trucking?
I know, right? It's only a matter of time, though, isn't it? I mean,
I think so. I think that's what they're setting it up for. You know, they're doing a huge multi-year 36, 72 issue lead up to Space Trucker.
Okay, so the Space Trucker guy could pick up Rich Rider.
U.S. Archer, U.S. Ace, depending
on... Yeah, he could pick up Rich Nova hitchhiking. You know, he's making his path through the Cancerverse.
Well, I mean, he and Rocket are buddies. I mean, that's a fact.
Yeah, that's true.
I feel like it's just a statistical improbability. If they spend X amount of time devoted to Marvel's space stuff... You can't not have U.S. Archer.
I mean, this stuff would write itself. I mean, they could get an artist to write it. I mean,
Bendis has
or
even...
Or they could just knock on Brian Clevenger's door and say, you did such a good job in that all-ages thing. Boy, we'd sure love to have you write a space trucker for us.
And I mean...
Just a pipe dream.
It's not like that's not out there. Bendis did include him in one of the... This was, I think it was New Avengers a little while
ago.
Yeah,
that's true. He was, he was auditioning to be a babysitter?
Yes.
Yeah. Squirrel Girl got the job, but...
It's okay.
He tried.
That just means that U.S. Archer is still looking for a job.
Nah.
So when they need transport, just saying.
I mean, he could smuggle the Guardians. I mean, they are outlaws. He could smuggle them, you know, like Han Solo.
Oh, man, it's like Knight Rider.
Yeah. I'm telling you, this stuff would work.
The entire Marvel Now line has been absolutely incredible.
I think Marvel has succeeded in what they were trying to do. I think, it was launched as like a good jumping on point for most new readers, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these storylines got so convoluted after a while, especially all the space stuff that everyone's approaching Guardians of the Galaxy.
You know, the same writers were on Avengers, the same writers were on all the space stuff, and this is like, they shuffled the deck, basically, in a successful way.
Especially with all the movies coming out, too. I feel like they're, like with the Captain America book, they're taking a page out of Mark Waid's, like the whole Man at a Time thing. The new Iron Man series is touching on extremists. All these things are in the movies right now, Guardians of the Galaxy. So Marvel's got a good plan with Marvel Now.
But what's interesting about it is that it's more than just, you know, a relaunch of titles. Mm-hmm. It's totally a shaking up of concepts. Like you mentioned the Captain America thing. Captain America, as of like issue, what, 6, 5 or so, he's spent a decade in an alternate reality with alien monsters trying to kill him, and he's been raising a son. I mean, that is not how you, with any sane person, launches a Captain America book. And it's great.
Yeah.
Clearly, that's going to be the second movie.
Right. They're calling it Winter Soldier is just like a test name can confuse people.
They should call that Nomad.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
the long hair.
Just saw the trailer for the Wolverine, and
came out today.
Looked good. Looked really good. I sure as hell hope that's not a letdown, but could be.
It seems like they're doing a few things right with it. It's not a prequel, so they're not beholden to any kind of any continuity they set up before. They can tell the story they want to tell without having to dovetail into everything that's come before it. So
didn't they do that last time and it sucked?
Yeah.
No, that was still supposed to be a prequel.
I can't stand that movie. I rented out a whole theater for it, and then like during it, everyone's like grumbling and whatnot, and then afterwards, everyone's like, "It was my fault that the movie sucked because I rented a theater out for them to watch it." Which, it's like, this is not my fault. I hated it probably more than you guys. I mean, come on, I'm one of you.
This one from the trailer, it's kind of got to feel like any standalone Wolverine series would, where it starts and you're like, I don't need to know where this takes place. It just kind of happens. Wolverine goes off sometimes.
Yeah, right. And again, it goes back to Claremont's writing. He's in the spotlight.
Yeah.
And with Days of Future Past, too, the X-Men movie. Man, I guess he'll be talking about all those sexual escapades.
Right. The world's finally ready for it.
Did we mention Young Avengers last time? If not, we should just say Young Avengers and, oh my God, it's so good.
Yeah, holy shit. Just, I love Young Loki. I really do. And the artist on that book has really captured just this. The art, the faces are so expressive. You don't need the words to know what's going on. The words are fantastic, but you don't need them.
I don't have a comment on the art, but I like that, you know, instead of just Young Avengers fighting old Avengers, you know, like they are wont to do, they have what teenagers' real arch nemesis is their parents.
Yeah, right.
It's so simple. Like, keep it simple and tell an awesome story.
I guess that's in a way a parallel to Runaways, and since we aren't getting any Runaways anytime soon, it's a great fit.
Yeah, Runaways was great, man. What the hell?
Happy stuff.
Yeah, with the total Marvel Now, though, what Tony mentioned before, it's like they let the writers write whatever they want, and they're willing to take chances. Like, this Young Avengers is a chance, you know, that they took on these creators that did, you know, Phonogram and whatnot, and they let them do what they want, and it hit.
Yeah, hey, you guys had a great indie book. How about something completely different with characters that are off many people's radars, but we'll put the book in the spotlight? Why the hell not? They did a great job. Now, it's not all hits. I mean, there's still things like Cable and X-Force, or is that what it's called? I started reading it. I couldn't.
Morbius.
I like those characters, and I don't like what's happening with them. Yeah, Morbius is a not particularly interesting book, despite having a great writer.
It's nothing on, say, Superior Spider-Man or Indestructible Hulk.
But even when it doesn't hit, at least we don't have this idea that it didn't hit because of editorial interference.
Yeah.
It didn't hit because not everything hits.
Yeah.
Just a story that didn't interest us, as opposed to a story that could have been told a different way, and you know that it could have.
Instead of a story that didn't interest its own writer by the time it came out.
The only concern that I have with Marvel Now is the double shipping. And sometimes you have to read 7 titles to get the complete picture of the storyline they have going on right now. And I know that Marvel Now is set up as a jumping on point, like I said, and I don't know what's happening yet, but I worry that for some new readers, it could get confusing again very fast, especially when you're getting 2 to 3 books a month sometimes. Yeah, who knows? I mean, you'll know a year from now, but
they launched it strong like that with the double shipping. And some of it, I think, is because they canceled so many books and they have to have at least, you know, X amount of books coming out. So they double ship that. You know, I'm looking at the June list and it doesn't look like anything is shipping double in June, but they certainly launched it that way.
Yeah. So.
And I mean, DC suffered the same way when they launched the new 52, only their confusion happened a lot faster, in my opinion, because they made a very public announcement. Yes, we're restarting everything. And they didn't restart everything. They restarted some things, and it was like, what the, it was just plotline.
And no one knows what anything is. No one knows the stakes are. No one knows who the characters are, and we still don't know. Yes.
Marvel Now, it was kind of this soft reboot. It was just, you know, we've got these new titles coming out. We've got these new creative teams, mm-hmm. and it led into it very organically.
It looks a bit like the movies.
Just enough.
Basically.
Right. But the movies are made for the average person in society, and where the comics were kind of...
Yeah, and fucking Iron Man. Tony's in space. Like, that's crazy, you know? Like, they've made it accessible, and yet somehow managed...
Yeah, they do wackadoo ideas, but the characters are accessible. That's Marvel Now. It's awesome. Where DC was doing more kind of pedestrian ideas, but accessible, you know? Like,
I'd say accessible within a trail of, like, 5 question marks. How about some indies? We just got Hickman's East of West just came out.
Holy shit.
You know, everyone's praising this. I got to jump on it.
Oh, you haven't read this yet?
No, not yet.
It's so good.
Just flip through it right now. Fucking flip through it.
I hear nothing but good things.
This is just the first issue and how he launches this whole different world, this alternate world and characterization and all this action and just enough flashbacks, you know, to fill in what we need to know. And of course, the nice little like map graph thing on the back inside cover. God.
It's this compelling juxtaposition of genres where it's post-apocalyptic, Western, future, end of days type thing going on.
It's a story about the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse set in an alternate reality future.
America,
where there was like a celestial event that ended the Civil War and left a fractured America that has 7 territories in it. There's a Union, there's a Confederacy, there's a land that's run by Indians, there's a land that's run by Chinese, and there's Texas.
But like our America, and the accessibility part is the things that divide us are stronger than the things that unite us. That's the theme of that. And mm-hmm. it's like, yeah, all these people are willing to die for these different religions and different causes of these 7 things, but even though they all are willing to, you know, sacrifice themselves for these greater ideas, they're more willing to kill each other for those greater ideas. So the things that unite them are the things that divide them, and it's really good.
And it's got such great characterization, and the art nut in me just absolutely, I lose it every single page. It's drop-dead gorgeous. And you get such a variety of expressions and character poses that really kind of sell you who these people are. When you're introduced to three of the Horsemen of the Apocalypse, they're kids. And you watch these kids doing these hideous things, and it's kind of like watching the young Hellfire Club that's going on in Wolverine and the X-Men, only without hating them as much.
It's kind of like Wonder Shows in.
Get in on East of West, because this is
be sold out by the time we get this up in a couple days.
Reserve your second print copy.
Because I haven't been this excited about a new book from Image since Saga.
Yeah, and same here.
You guys still actively following Morning Glories?
I am.
Man.
25 was a doozy.
Yeah, I tell you what. This book, I still love it. But at every successive issue, it gets harder and harder to read. Unless, like, I feel like after this is done, I'm mandatorily going to have to go back and read it all in one sitting again. Because there's so many plot threads now, it is hard to... I mean, it's brilliant. I don't know if I'm getting
it. As a monthly serialization, it does get kind of hard to keep track of everything when you've got 3 other series.
I don't know if I have the big picture in my head anymore. I think I may have lost it.
I reread 25 3 or 4 times to kind of remind myself where things were. And I still don't have the entire big picture, but I was able to put together everything. And it's like, this issue answered a lot of the questions that I've had since issue 1, and then raised a whole bunch more. And I still feel like Spencer knows where this is going.
This book, more than anything, it reminds me of Lost. It reminds me of Lost when I loved Lost the most. And Spencer, you know, we interviewed him a couple of years ago when the book started, and, you know, he looked me in the eyes and said that he knew how this was going to end. He had it all plotted out already, and I believe him. And it's a finite series. He knows roughly what issue it's going to end at. And I read this and I'm like, this is incredible. I'm confused as hell, but I love it. This is not going to let me down. You know, I don't think that this is going to be a waste of time. I think it's going to be a really incredible story once it's all put together. Right now, more than ever, I'm feeling like, man, I should really just wait till this is over, though. Hey, Brian.
Hey, Kat.
You're on the creator side of things. You socialize with people on Twitters and stuff. Is there anything we should be watching out for in the indie circuit?
I don't know nothing.
You don't know nothing?
I sit in a dank cave with a one bar of Wi-Fi and type into the darkness.
Marvel Now is my pick right now. I'm back into Marvel Now, the Galaxy books, Guardians of the Galaxy, Thanos. That's it. That's what I'm excited. I was on a Batman kick forever, and now I'm looking forward the most, I would say.
It's a good place to be.
Yeah.
Marvel's having a lot of fun. Image is putting out like nonstop hits.
I mean, I'm still loving Saga. Every single issue packs so much in its pages. Oh, yeah. It's ridiculous. Walking Dead.
Glad Lion Cat's not dead. By the way.
Oh dear God. when that final panel happened, I nearly wept. It was like, no, of all the characters, I was okay with the stalk. I was okay with that. I was even okay with the dad, but Lion Cat, he didn't
wasn't
do
his fault, man.
he was just at the wrong place at the wrong time with a vengeful ex-bitch. Legend of Luther Strode. It's a 6-issue miniseries. I love Trad Moore's art. It is so visceral, so violent.
Did we talk about Aaron getting killed last episode?
I don't know. I got killed on the cover. It was awesome.
Yeah, Aaron
did.
Got killed
it was
on the
one
cover
of, the, it was
of
a
issue
highlight
two?
Of my day.
Three.
I know at least the first three Phantom variants all link together with Luther going through and murdering various comic professionals.
That's awesome.
You're a professional.
Y'all had it coming.
I've died three times now in comics.
Pretty privileged.
Yeah, that's an exclusive club. I don't know how many people.
Not really. Like every comic character dies 3-5 times.
That's true.
Oh man,
he's trying to catch up to Guy Gardner. That's his goal.
So if you guys are into any of these books that we're talking about, you know, talk to us on the forums, hit us up on Facebook, or shout at us on Twitter. But you know, if you're reading something that we haven't discussed, you want to know what we think about it, ask us. We'll tell you. And if we haven't read it, we'll check it out. Nerdy Show is listener supported, as you well know. And if you don't, we're listener supported, and you make this show and all the other shows in the network possible, and we are eternally grateful. March has been an incredible month for contributions.
What the hell is wrong with you guys? Whatever it is, keep doing it.
Yeah, you guys are
seriously.
You guys are way cool. Tell you what, we got a D&D recording coming up, and the only way we could guarantee that Lefty Lucy would be able to be on it was if we flew her down. And you guys took care of that. So
boom.
Well, half of it was a comp ticket that I had and the other half was you guys. So thank you very much. We're trying our damnedest to get D&D out there. I've given shout outs to everybody who's contributed in March so far, but I haven't said thanks yet to Caitlin Kruger, who supported us recently. She said, student loans suck, tax returns don't. Have some money and keep being awesome. Thank you, Caitlin. Thank you so, so much. And also to everybody, this episode comes out April 1st. It's not an April Fool's joke.
And some of the news we leaked might have been.
No.
We'll let you decide which.
No, we don't have any irritating fake episodes this year. Something else has happened, but well, it's more fun than irritating. Come next episode, I will give shout outs to everybody all at once who supported us in March, because you guys have been just so, so, so awesome. But for this recording, March isn't over yet, so that'll be coming next episode. And, you know, stay tuned for some other cool stuff coming up. We are putting together our long-awaited episode on giant monsters and their natural enemies, which will have some very awesome guests.
Best for you, Shadow Man.
And I can't say exactly who yet, because I don't want to say anything that I shouldn't say, but it will be way cool, and you are going to like it. I can guarantee it. And then after that, our slate will be clean for episodes that have been requested by listeners. So we may have to unveil in the coming months another support drive where you guys choose a topic for us to discuss for an episode. And so look forward to that.
I'm an expert on death and divorce if you want to pick either of those.
and the occasional comic book still, right? You haven't left that behind?
No, I just... putting that other stuff out there.
Okay. It's important to know. So.
Oh, man. Yeah, you're going to get an episode called Morbid Truth with Aaron.
I'll bring on like funeral directors and divorce lawyers as well.
Just talk about sadness. That's what Nerdy Show Comic Show is all about. Sadness.
Hey, it's a gimmick just like the comics do.
All right, so this is the track we're going to be going out on. What I got for you is some new word burglar. This is from his upcoming G.I. Joe-themed album, Welcome to Cobra Island. He released a 3-song EP to get everybody stoked for the album on Bandcamp recently. We'll link to that on this episode's page. And this track is called Rap Viper. It's just a sneak peek into what we can expect from the new album, and we're all pretty damn excited. Bye, I'm Cap.
Bye, I'm Brian.
Bye, I'm Adam.
Bye, I'm Tony.
Bye, I'm Aaron.
Goodbye, Aaron.
Bye.
Throwing my words and chill like snow serpents. Dope serving like headman in a drugstore. Once